Hey everyone, welcome to the Broken and Redeemed podcast, where we dive into real conversations about faith, struggles, and the things we don't always talk about in church. I'm Eric Ferguson.
And I'm Jenny Ferguson.
And I'm Jessica DeVoe.
We're just three friends who love Jesus and aren't afraid to wrestle with the hard questions.
Whether you're married, single, struggling with doubt, or trying to find your place in the church, this podcast is for you.
So grab a cup of coffee, settle in, and let's get started.
Have you ever been asked, "So, when are the kids coming?" Sometimes it's said with a smile, sometimes with concern, but it always seems to carry the weight of expectation. But what if the answer isn't simple? What if there's longing, confusion, or even pain behind that question?
Today, we're getting real about what it's like to be married without kids, especially when your heart longs for them.
We're talking about the pressure, the quiet struggles, and what it means to trust God when the timeline doesn't look like you thought it would.
Here's what we're covering today. First, we'll share some personal stories, times when questions or assumptions about having kids hit hard. Then we'll talk about cultural and church expectations, especially around motherhood and womanhood. Let's get started.
Hey guys, how you doing? Anything new and exciting that you guys want to share this time around?
Well,
if you want.
Sure. I just signed up for 2 writing conferences this week.
Yeah!
That's exciting.
That is awesome.
Eric and I went to a podcast conference this past weekend. It was really informative and exciting to meet other people in the podcasting space.
Okay. And about that, I had my absolute breakthrough moment this weekend.
Uh-oh.
This past weekend. It was great. I found the precise time when you need to drive down the Gardner Expressway in Toronto and not experience the crazy traffic that you normally experience during the week. It was early Sunday morning, and you can actually dodge the potholes. You actually have space to maneuver. It's so great.
Right. Now you told everyone the secret, so everyone's going to drive there Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it. And then maybe the rest of the week, everybody else will have relief. Okay. Today, we're diving into a topic that's really personal for us. What it's like to be married, but unable to have kids, at least for now. This is something Jenny and I have struggled with, and we know we're not alone.
It's one of those things where people don't always realize the weight of their words. You hear questions like, "So, when are you going to have kids?" And it's like, "Well, I'd love to, but it's not that simple."
I think this topic is really important because in the church, there's often expectation that once you're married, kids will just naturally follow. And when that doesn't happen, it can feel isolating. Eric and Jenny, can you give us a little background, the story of why you've had to wait to have kids, even though you long for them?
Let's go back a little bit. So we were dating through late 2018, 2019, and the pandemic hit early 2020, about 3 months, said it fully set in before we got married. And with that, our journey began with the lack of access to healthcare for Jenny. And we ended up, as we'll talk about in a bit, discovering some things that have led us to not being able to try to have kids for the last about 4.5 years. So in 2019, my wife was diagnosed with hypermobility. It is a muscular skeletal condition that basically you're super stretchy and you need to exercise frequently to maintain a certain level of fitness. Otherwise, you start having side effects involving chronic pain, possible joint dislocations, strains and sprains at random intervals. There's a whole wide range of things that can happen.
Yeah, so my hypermobility has affected my ability to work. I didn't have any pain with my hypermobility until I started working when I was 20 in my first job. I was working for a month full-time, packing peppers at a greenhouse, and I suddenly had a sharpshooting pain down my right side. I went to the emergency room, and by the time they saw me, it was gone, and they didn't let me back into work. So then I started working a year later after school semester was done, and I started working full-time at McDonald's, and the pain came and went every once so often. And then it got to a point where every time it came, I had to go home early to put ice on it, and it would go away on its own. After working like that for 2 years, one day I woke up and I was in severe pain. I tried calling in, but my supervisor had said that they needed me. So I ended up working 8 hours, hobbling around, barely able to move. I was in so much pain. I still believe my hip was out of joint. And the next day, I couldn't actually walk. So I called in and I said, I'm sorry, I can't come in. And this happened in 2017. And I was offered a job at a car lot. And I started sitting down more and my pain levels got better. I also got coverage for physio, massage, and chiropractic. And I used up all the coverage, hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth. And I started feeling better in the chiropractic. Doctor suggested that I start swimming. Mm-hmm. So I looked into that and I saw that I could become a lifeguard. So I can go swim and feel better and make a job out of it because I can't do these standing jobs anymore because I'm in too much pain. I didn't know why. So I went and became a lifeguard. I was in school and I worked at camp for 2 summers. It was great. And then that's when Eric and I started dating in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit in 2020. So I stopped swimming. So I wasn't swimming from 2020 to 2023. Mm-hmm. And in those 3 years, my hypermobility got worse and worse because I lost my strength because I wasn't able to swim. Mm-hmm. That I was using swimming to maintain my strength. And it got to the point where I couldn't lift heavy things anymore. Like when we were dating, I was able to help his mom move from their house to the house next door. And I was very active and I had no pain. And fast forward to 2023 and I was in so much pain everywhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's hypermobility.
And I think a lot of people don't understand your hypermobility. I have people asking, so what's wrong with her? And it's really hard to explain because it's an invisible disability. Mm-hmm. And you look perfectly normal on the outside. Like you look perfectly healthy. And people don't see, I've seen because I've become close friends with you over the last few years, that I'll come to your house and then next thing you're using crutches or you have some kind of sprain on your wrist or like your hip's out of joint. And a lot of people don't understand that and how that impacts your daily life and how that actually impacts your ability to have kids in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's hard when you don't see somebody in a condition day in, day out like that. Even for me, being married to Jenny, seeing her day in, day out, she says, oh, my back is hurting. Can you feel it? Do you feel anything off? I touch around and I feel and I can't find anything. But for her, I can see it affecting her. It affects how she walks directly. But it's hard for me to understand sometimes too. And it is a condition that oftentimes people feel overlooked and stuff with because you can't always see it. It's there. It's under the surface. It's something that people are bothered with and suffer with, but oftentimes people have to mask their symptoms and push through stuff because people just are not empathetic. They don't believe them, which is sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the reasons why, or you still have to delay having kids. Mm-hmm. And the other one was because you had endometriosis. You went for surgery for that for last year, right?
2 years ago.
Oh, wow. 2 years ago.
Almost 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
It's been a trip.
Endometriosis is a disease in which endometrial tissue grows everywhere. It's usually tissue that's inside the uterus. We still don't know why, but for some reason, it starts growing outside the uterus. And it starts growing on all the different organs and can, in rare cases, even travel in the bloodstream up to the lungs, the brain, the eyes. Very rare circumstances, or in my case, also rare, the diaphragm. So because of COVID, I couldn't get normal medical tests done just to check on my reproductive health. So I had to wait until 2021. Mm-hmm. In 2021, I had a routine ultrasound to check. My family doctor called me with the results a few days later, and she was very urgent. She told me that the cyst on my left ovary had grown to 8.3 by 9 by 6.5 centimeters. So it was possibly an endometrioma and a smaller 4.6 by 2.5 by 3 centimeter cyst on my right ovary. She said it was urgent that I needed to wait to get pregnant until we get these cysts checked out. Mm-hmm. 3 months later, I got the call at the MRI appointment date. And 5 months later, I had the MRI at the hospital. And then it took 4 months for the results to come back. So to look at the timeline, with all this, August 2021, I had the ultrasound, and it took until June 2022 to get the MRI results, which pretty much said the same thing, that the cysts are probably endometriomas, but it didn't show anything else. A year passed by, and all I had done was an ultrasound and an MRI. Mm-hmm. My family doctor scheduled me to see my gynecologist. She warned again not to get pregnant until the cysts are removed.
Yeah.
So 3 months later, I saw my gynecologist and told him all my symptoms, and he looked at the MRI results. He said he would be very surprised if I don't have endometriosis, but he said he couldn't diagnose me until he did a laparoscopic surgery to see what is inside. He put me on a waiting list for ablation laparoscopy surgery. So that was September 2022.
We went back in January 2023, and you did the other ultrasound just to confirm what was going on. And then we still hadn't heard from the hospital at all. Normally here, when your gynecologist refers you for surgery, you'll get a call that will schedule your date for the surgery. And we had still not heard at all about a surgery appointment or date.
So that was January 2023. April 2023, I saw my gynecologist again. He said, based on the ultrasound that he did in January, the larger cyst had grown a bit in a year and a half. He said that he would do the ablation laparoscopy, but if it's really bad, he will have to do classic open surgery so he can take organs out, like the ovaries, if it was that bad. This is really bad news, since he was talking about the condition being this progressed. Eric and I had worked during the pandemic and saved up for a house, and we had been in our new house for 2 months. So this was really bad news to be getting this, because we had been waiting for 2 years at this point to hear that I had this disease and it was progressing.
And it was progressing fast, like very fast.
So at this point, I was on the surgery list for 8 months and I still didn't get a call for surgery, which meant I was going to get the surgery in at least a year and a half. And I was doing research online for other ladies. It was taking up to 2 years to get a surgery. It was like after they got the appointment 2 years later, because there were so many backups. And I realized I don't think I can continue waiting. The process took so long to happen. In these 2 years, what was happening that my back pain was increasing and increasing to the point, because when we started this process, I just needed the heating pad on my back when I woke up and went to bed.
Which is not normal, okay? You literally had to wear that heating pad everywhere you go with you. And I know you were embarrassed that you had to do it. You'd be like, oh, you're young and you're normal. And you're like, no, that's not normal. And the medical system gets like, oh, you're fine. No, you're not fine.
So yeah, it started like that, where it was just in the morning and the evening. But over those 2 years, it progressed to the point where I had to stay in the heating pad between Skip the Dishes. I was doing Instacart to Skip the Dishes during the pandemic. I had to stay on the heating pad in between orders. And then I went from working 68 hours a day, some days even 10 hours, like taking orders and stuff. I went from doing that to only doing Skip the Dishes shift for 4 hours in the evening and barely making it through that and staying on the heating pad, coming home and waiting for orders on the heating pad. I was in so much pain. So hearing this news that it had progressed while waiting was devastating. I started doing research online and I saw that other women were able to look at the results themselves. So I went to the hospital and ordered the results and we looked at the cyst for the first time. I remember that moment when he first looked at it and it was shocking. We were told that that 10 centimeter cyst, oh, it's not too big.
So for those who might not know how big that is, 10 centimeters is, I would say, a little bit larger than a softball. That was the largest one. And then she had one that was a little bit smaller than a baseball, golf ball size. There were several. And then because there were so many of them, they couldn't see all of them.
So when you looked at these MRI images and saw how much space they took up, they took up a lot of space in abdomen. That's when I first realized this is why my back is hurting more and more and I need the heating pad so much, because I could see it on the MRI myself. The cysts were pushing my organs into my back. And I was like, that makes sense why I have this lower back pain. This is why. And I realized I need to do something about this. I need to have surgery sooner. So I did more research and I found that there's more and more Canadian women are going outside of country for surgery. And I found a clinic in Romania, which is ironic because my parents came from Romania in 1994. So I found a clinic there and they're very advanced in the care of endometriosis. And I could get in a few months. And I was shocked, of course, because you can't do that here. And it was not the ablation surgery that they do here, which is where they just burn off the tissue and it comes back quickly. They actually excise, like with cancer. They actually go in and cut out tissue. Mm-hmm. It increases the time between surgeries. Mm-hmm. So I talked with Eric. We did more research. I sent my ultrasound MRI results to the doctor in Romania. Mm-hmm. And he and the doctor of radiology there looked at it, and they diagnosed me with endometriosis by looking at my MRI. And I was confused. It's like, how are they doing that? Because here in Canada, you can't diagnose, right? Like the gynecologist said, you can't diagnose based on
imaging.
You can only do it through surgery. And they were diagnosing me on the MRI. I was like, what? So Eric and I talked about it. We prayed about it, and we booked the surgery. Mm-hmm. And when I got this email for surgery, I was in the middle of taking lifeguarding classes. Mm-hmm. So I could work as a lifeguard, and I was feeling better with my musculoskeletal health, but the endo pain was poof. So I got the MRI and I was about to go into lifeguard class, and I realized, what am I doing? I'm in lifeguarding class and it's very physically active and I'm about to have surgery. Mm-hmm. What am I doing?
Well, and during that time, your pain was still getting worse, even with your exercising, like your back pain from the endometriosis.
The lifeguarding classes were about 4 months long. When I started lifeguarding class, it was okay. And each week, I was noticing my lower back was hurting more and more. I was like, oh, I'm just cold and shivering. But it got to the point where when I got the email for the scheduled surgery, I didn't even get in the water because I was like, if I go in there, I'm going to start shivering and my back is already hurting. It'll hurt even more. Mm-hmm. And I realized I couldn't finish the class. And that was a very hard decision that I had to make. I went in the locker room and called Eric and I said, I can't finish because I'm in so much pain and I'm about to have surgery. And I did not want to do that. I don't like quitting. I've had to stop other things because of my health. I'm like, this is just adding to that list, but I just had to do it.
I had to tell you that it was okay to quit because you had been through so much and trying to complete things and just life circumstances, your body, all kinds of things kept stepping in the way. And I'm like, it's okay. You can't just push yourself because you feel like you have to. And so I had to kind of support you through that and help you through that because it was hard for you. Like you were so close. You were literally so close.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I stopped the lifeguarding classes. I focused on walking and focusing on that as my exercise because that's all I was able to do at that point because I was in so much pain. With regular exercising and swimming, I couldn't do anymore. So yeah, we booked the surgery and we trust God and we're like, we don't know how we're going to pay for this. We started a GoFundMe and we said, it's all in God's hands. We don't know how we're going to go. But I need to do this. Mm-hmm. So the surgery ended up being paid for in full by our church family and my parents' church family.
Yeah, people pulled through and really helped us there. And God provided for us to be able to go and get that surgery paid for. It was amazing to see God provide that way.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful, too, that we knew that we could go and not have to worry about stuff. Things we were taking care of, and we were able to pay for the surgery, and she was able to have a decent recovery period, and we were thankful for that.
Yeah, that was an interesting experience going outside of country for surgery.
So Jenny went for surgery on August 4th, 23, and it ended up being a longer, more extensive surgery than what the doctor was expecting due to the fact that he discovered more cysts than were in the imaging that he had. And it was growing into her diaphragm. Her bladder was attached to her perinatrium through it. And organs were also attached together, which is basically what they would call stage 4 endometriosis, when your organs are starting to adhere to one another and adhere to different parts of your abdomen. Her cyst on her uterus was so big that her ovaries were twisted around front and back in her pelvis. Her uterus was getting crushed by this one cyst as well. It was a delicate operation that she had to go through, but we're thankful for the skill of the physician because he was able to save both of her ovaries. He was able to detach the organs from one another successfully, pull out all the endo that he could find, remove the cysts that he could find, and then he also had to operate on her diaphragm and her bladder, and he did that very well, to the point where she was able to have a decently quick recovery because he did such a clean job of everything. With that, her recovery on the outside was good. Her internal recovery was longer, and she still has a little bit of an issue with her diaphragm because of the fact that he had to remove endo from her diaphragm.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with shortness of breath and struggling with getting back into cardio again because of that shortness of breath, but it'll come. So the recovery from the surgery part itself, like the reproductive area, that went very well. I was able to get back into some Pilates and exercising that I was doing before surgery, and that was great. And then I made the mistake over the winter of 2023 of not walking anymore because I had walked that year a lot. I was like, oh, I'll just bike instead. And I did that, and I had no idea what was going to happen, that I lost a lot of strength in my joints, and I started having muscle sprains randomly all over in my legs. One week it would be the quadriceps and I couldn't be able to walk and I would be on crutches. And that would take 3 to 4 weeks to recover. And then I'd be like, okay, now I can start exercising again, trying to build up to the level of fitness I had before surgery for my musculoskeletal health. And then another muscle sprained and I would have to recover from that and be on crutches again. And this happened from January to April 2024. Mm-hmm. That was actually worse time for me than waiting for the surgery because I knew I had to have surgery and get better at that. And this, I didn't know why. I felt like my muscles and joints were shutting down and I was trying to build up that strength again after surgery to be able to swim so I can be normal again. And I couldn't because I tried swimming. It's like, I can't kick because it's my knee hurting. Another time, oh, I can't because my hip is hurting. Another one, this muscle is hurting. Oh, or the sprains. Obviously, you can't kick when you're sprained. So I started doing research again. Thankful God gave me the ability to research. Mm-hmm. So I researched and I found something called the Wealth Hypermobility Program. I found a few folks who had hypermobility like me and took the program. And went from barely functioning like I was to being able to go see people again, to hold babies again, to travel, to have kids again. And I realized, I think there's something in this. I did more research and I asked Eric and we prayed and there's some money left over from the GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. And we decided to purchase that program. So I've been taking that from April 2024 mm-hmm. to now. And now it's March 2025. Mm-hmm. I've successfully replaced swimming with this land-based exercise program, which is going to be a game changer because if there's ever lockdowns again, I can maintain my strength in case something like that happens and I can continue my strength going forward. So this program lays on a base level of strength. We also purchased the next level up of program that we're going to start in a few months. And that one will help me segue into going to the gym and using gym machines, which I never thought I'd be able to because of my hypermobility, because I get injured, right? So, but it's going to help me build my strength even more. And I have a lot of hope that things will continue getting better. And so for now, we're not having kids because just injuring myself like that all the time.
Like even right now, as we're sitting here doing this podcast, we're sitting on our couch. Jenny's got the yoga ball out under her feet and just trying to stretch out, move and stuff like that. This is why we haven't had kids yet. It's a wisdom issue because with hypermobility, her body lends itself to stretch and sprain and tear more easily. So if we were to have kids now before she's gotten through her strengthening phase, it could be dangerous for her. And for most people, they're like, oh, how dangerous can it actually be? I recommend that you go look up hypermobile women who are pregnant or giving birth and look at the stories that women have. It actually can be life-threatening.
And obviously, it's going to vary from woman to woman, but Jenny does her research and she knows
her body.
She knows her body.
She's done the research And she understands the risk behind it. And so we've prayed a lot. Like, we've prayed a lot through this. We've talked to people through this. And we believe right now that it would be wise to not have kids right now and just keep focusing on strengthening her body and working towards that. Lord willing, one day we will be able to have kids.
Mm-hmm. So segue into another question I have for you guys. Maybe more for Jenny. Can you describe what it felt like the first time when someone asked you about kids in a way that kind of caught you off guard when you were like, you know, in the middle of waiting for surgery? Or it could be after surgery, like when someone asks you a question when you're about to get surgery or after surgery, how did that make you feel without people really, I guess, understanding?
So when folks were asking after you got married, I was like, oh yeah, well, I'd love to have kids someday. And then I was in the process of waiting for the MRI, got the MRI, waiting for the gynecologist, waiting for surgery. I know more now that there's people open to talking about women's health issues. Mm-hmm. But at that point, I was still very shy about it. So I wasn't telling anyone, which is not good. So when people were asking about when you have kids, it was like, oh, I'd love to someday. And as I kept hearing it, I started thinking, it is normal. Like, by now, couples are having kids. And as time went on and waiting, I started wondering, are we ever going to have kids? You know, how us humans, COVID felt like forever, and it was 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it felt like forever. And I was really hoping and praying that everything would be okay and we'd be able to have kids.
You guys have been married for like 4 years?
Yeah, and we watched, well, when we were dating, you saw my niece born, my brother and sister-in-law had their first kid, and then their second kid came, and now they've had their third, and then there have been other families, friends of ours, that have had kids too, and it's just, it's been very...
Kind of feel like you're falling behind a little bit.
Yeah, you feel like you're falling behind, and again, not that people are trying to make us feel like we're falling behind. No, it's just the natural course of things are not happening for us. And so it's disheartening to know that in one sense, we think about we're losing time. At the same time, we're seeing these kids are being born and they're growing up. And it just, waiting is hard because we're like, when are we going to be able to have our chance?
Yeah.
Our opportunity to do this?
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to act on wisdom and we have to act on our own situation. The emotional load is difficult, for sure.
I love the verse, Psalm 34, verse 18. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that verse has been one that's stuck closely to us through this time.
Yeah.
Because God intimately knows our struggles. He intimately knows our sorrow.
And it's a good desire what you guys have to have
and
kids.
Yes, and he knows it's a good desire that we have.
Yeah.
And I think about Christ, who also suffered so much as well.
Yeah.
That he understands and knows our suffering because he also went through suffering himself and was crushed. So being able to lean on him in that has been very important. These verses are very important to remind us and give us strength.
If you maybe mentioned your health and they're just saying, oh, just trust in God, you'll be fine. How does that phrase affect you?
As well-meaning as it can be, I feel like it's one of those, I want to say this carefully, I feel like it's one of those quick fix type phrases.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. Just push ahead and trust God. He'll fix it all.
Yeah.
He'll make it all great. Or he'll just give you the strength to get through all of it. And the way that I see that in our circumstance is, again, it would not be wise for us to do that. And it would mean that we're not good stewards of what God's given us in the sense of maintaining Jenny's physical ability to even conduct herself in life.
Yeah.
If she had kids, had a complicated pregnancy or traumatic birth experience where she had, you know, tearing and different things like that, that would mean that her recovery period would be much longer. Could also mean that she may not be able to have kids again, because the damage could be so great.
And her recovery period would be way longer than probably just someone who has normal health.
Yes. And that would mean that she wouldn't be able to do the things that she would want to do that she's doing right now as a wife.
Like, we weren't expecting my recovery time to be so long after surgery.
Yeah.
But it was because of my hypermobility that the recovery was much longer.
Mm-hmm. You had a lot of setbacks. And that was very discouraging for you. So do you guys ever feel like you need to justify your situation to others, like your decision for waiting to have kids?
I would say early on in our marriage, like right after COVID and when her health started to do things, I felt very much like I had to explain our situation, defend our situation. And I may have been a little bit more confrontational about some of those questions back in that time. But as time's gone on and people, one, they've seen my wife and her struggles, people are becoming more understanding. And two, as people experience our healthcare system here in Canada more and more, they understand more why my wife struggles.
Can I just say, I didn't know, we'll get back to Jenny, but I didn't know how bad our healthcare system was because I don't really use their healthcare system until I met Jenny.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And you're like, oh, wow, we have a really bad healthcare system.
Same.
Well, I have gotten some comments where I can't just keep getting stronger. I'll just need to go and try to have kids and trust God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I try to explain that I still need to build up my strength again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Eric was saying earlier, we need to be wise with the health I'm being given back again for the first time in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not a good time right now. And I'm not in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not God's timing right now, and that's okay. But when I'm doing better, we can try to have kids. We haven't even tried. We don't know what my fertility actually is. We may go and be like, we want to have 3 kids. I may never be able to get pregnant. At the end of the day, it's up to God whether we'll have kids or not. Mm-hmm. Even though I went and did surgery and I'm doing all this work to build up my strength again, at the end of the day, even when we try, I may be infertile.
Yep.
40 or 50% of women with endometriosis really struggle to get pregnant. And if the endometriosis grows back, in the meantime, with me building up the rest of my strength, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I just learning to trust in God.
This is just a follow-up question. So coming to terms with that you may never have kids, how are you dealing with that? How are you currently going through that, thinking through that, dealing that with God? And I know it's probably still a process that you're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't fully been able to say we've tackled that question.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It comes around. We think about it again and again.
Like, yeah.
Because it's something that you're constantly dealing with, right? Like, when, Lord willing, we're able to have our first kid, then that question may sit more in the done category, more so. But right now, it's just constant waiting, trusting, and believing that God knows best.
Yeah.
Right now.
And that's not easy.
No. No, it's not.
And also being open to other options as well. I've always been open to option of adoption and fostering. So even if we can't have our own kids, at the end of the day, I'm feeling better and we can love any kid as just as much as our own.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
So the goal is to have kids, whether it's our own or adopting and keeping it open-ended. So not like it's only our kids or not having kids. We're open-ended on that, and that's helpful.
Yeah, and another thing that's helped me, having nieces and a nephew close by helps me a bit because I can pour my love as an uncle into them right now. And that helps.
I love you guys.
Yeah.
And they're always excited to see us. And so it's nice to be able to have that. And for Jenny, I would say it's a bit harder because you see the kids and you're like, I can't have kids yet. So it can be both a blessing where you love them and you pour yourself into them, but at the same time, it reminds you what you can't have right now. So that's hard for you.
That's easier now after surgery.
Yes.
Right before surgery is at the point where I saw a kid and I started crying
because
it was really hard. Actually, Eric and I process the longing for children differently. And There's a verse in 1 Samuel 1:10 where Hannah, she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. Mm-hmm. And this is when she went to the temple and she was praying for God to give her a child.
Mm-hmm.
When her husband's other wife had numerous kids and she was making fun of Hannah and belittling her. And Hannah was really struggling like that. Then 2 verses earlier, Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep and why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? I find it very interesting that that's in the Bible where it shows the differences between Elkanah and Hannah, how they were handling the same situation. It's very different emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very interesting. But Eric is not like Elkanah.
No.
But it's just saying, like, we've processed things differently. And that's okay.
Well, and I understand Elkanah's point of view in a sense, because sometimes I get into that mode as well because I'm not the one bearing the kid. So for me, it's a little more detached as a man. Mm. And so I don't have the same attachment to the idea as, say, you do. It's different for me in that. And I think there have been times, and it's sad my memory fails on this, but I think there have been times where I've kind of been like, you know, well, you've got me, you know, we don't have kids, but you got me. And then you kind of, you sweetly look at me and you're like, I know, but, and then I'm like, yeah, there's the but. And it's okay. And it's okay because it is a real struggle. It should not be dismissed. And I don't want to dismiss my wife's feelings on that because they're God-given feelings. God created her to be this way. And it's a good thing.
What's a memory that best captures how this longing of having kids has impacted your everyday life or your marriage?
Well, I had a childhood dream of having 6 kids. I would pretend I had 6 kids when I played Game of Life, when I played Barbie and playing house and stuff. As my health deteriorated the last 4 years, I felt that dream fading away. And it impacted my everyday life in that I was starting to lose hope that whatever happened. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm okay with it. 6 kids, definitely not happening. But that's okay. God's helped me work through it.
The verse related to this topic that I think helps summarize kind of our relationship through this is Ecclesiastes 4:10-9. Part of verse 9 is, two are better than one. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. And we've had to lift up one another. Me for Jenny, sometimes physically because of her hypermobility. But oftentimes it's spiritually and mentally. And just to lift one another up and build one another up in Christ and encourage one another as we deal with these hard things, hard questions. You know, Jenny's missed a lot of stuff.
Mm.
Not only has she not been able to have kids yet, but she's also missed a majority of our nieces and nephews' birthdays. And so that's been a lot for Jenny because she sees these milestones happen. And I've been able to go to most of these things, but she's had to stay home for one reason or another, health reasons wise. Yeah. She was at my niece's first birthday, and since then, she hasn't been able to make it. And she's missed several Thanksgivings as well because of her surgery and her hypermobility. She just couldn't do it. Her body just can't handle it. But we're thankful that she has been improving in that slowly over time. And our goal is to make it to more things, but that's always up in God's hands because we don't know what she will be like day to day.
It does help that I don't have the severe period pain that I used to have from 15 years old to when I had my surgery at 29. I didn't mention that earlier, but I had to heavily medicate to be able to do anything on my period. So not having that level of pain anymore, plus the stage 4 endo in my back and the hypermobility pain starting to fade a little in the past. I'm having more hope that things will be better. Mm-hmm. I love James 1:2-4. Mm-hmm. Consider pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
As hard as it's been the last few years, and my faith has been strengthened
mm-hmm.
from trusting God to provide the GoFundMe money for me to go to Romania
mm-hmm.
to having faith that the hypermobility program will work and the surgery, and then having faith that whatever he has will come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, I love that verse too.
I think a lot of us don't want to think of joy while we're in trials.
No, we don't. Honestly, we don't. The first,
like, when you read that verse, you're like, ooh, yeah.
And
I'd rather not.
Well, I want the relief now.
Yeah.
That's my mind. It's like, why would God put me through this? And I forget the fact that God allows us to go through these trials, and he allows us to experience these hard things because it helps us grow in our trust in him. It also helps us grow in our empathy and understanding of people.
Yeah.
When we understand our trials properly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps us empathize with others in ways that we would not have before if we hadn't gone through these things. We wouldn't be able to empathize and understand people.
Yeah.
In deeper ways. So to consider it a joyful thing to face these trials, the proving of our faith being a joyous thing, for me, it counters my natural desire to run from suffering and try to find the peace and the safety now in the immediate present.
Or sometimes be like, well, God doesn't care about because mm-hmm. I'm praying about this. And mm-hmm. isn't this a good thing to have? Or I feel like I'm being crushed under the weight of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's learning, I think, how to trust God in those things. And
mm-hmm.
that's not an easy thing to do. Trust. So like, even now I say we're all going through different things mm-hmm. and we want out of it, but mm-hmm. God's letting us go through it.
No, you need to go through it more.
Yeah.
You're not done.
You're not done.
Yeah. And
I'm not finished. I have more work to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You said you're not finished. I was like, guys, you interrupted me.
No, yeah, Jenny's right. God's not finished with us, and he's still working on us. And yeah, it's so important that we do bear up under these struggles. It's hard.
Have there been times when you felt especially close to God in the waiting, or times you have felt distant?
Perfect segue into that.
Yeah, going through trials like that, it not just helps us grow spiritually and emotionally, mentally, it ends up bringing us close to God
mm-hmm.
Over time. In the process, obviously, there's a lot of days where it's feel distant
mm-hmm.
and it's like, what's happening? But, you know, coming out of the endometriosis ordeal, I feel more close to God that way, and I can trust him for the future more, even though I don't know what's going to happen. That was a very scary experience to have to go to another country for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But he was there with me and gave me the courage and strength to get through that. And I felt him close, and a lot of people were praying. And
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I just felt very loved and supported. And I'm very thankful for everyone who helped like that.
Yeah, all the messages of support we got from people, not just at our church or Jenny's parents' church, but there were people from other churches that we didn't know that they were saying that they were praying for us. People from Romania, people from the US, connections through connections. And we heard back through the grapevine that people were all praying for us and stuff. And it was very wonderful. And I like Psalm 130 verse 5 with this, because it encapsulates what God's been teaching us through this. It says, I wait for the Lord, my whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. And so learning to wait on the Lord through this, having the encouragement of believers around the world praying for us, has been an incredible journey. Yeah, through times we felt distant from God in some ways, because it's so dark some days, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so difficult some days for reasons that we've said previously about, like, wanting to have relief from these things.
Yep.
But then at the same time, we do see God working eventually. We do see God working through it. We see him providing. We learn that our situation, we're okay with it. Starting to learn that. And just waiting patiently while working on things. just in life, just keep going, doing the things to improve Jenny's health, doing things to improve our lifestyle so that way it makes her stronger and makes her healthier. Just doing the little steps. Just keep working towards that, even in the difficulty.
And growing in our love mm-hmm. for one another and
yeah.
communication and trust. Oh, yeah. And
so important.
Just a closer, it's deepened our relationship for sure, going through everything.
Mm-hmm.
Deepened our relationship with God and with each other.
Mm-hmm. It's forced us to have to like confront our own attitudes on the subject mm-hmm. and towards each other, and helped us learn to communicate better, as Jenny said. Help us learn to love. It's helped me love Jenny deeper through this. Instead of the love being superficial for her, it's pushed me to love her even in her dark times, when she's sad, when she's depressed, when she's overwhelmed, when she's super sad. And then it's made those times where we have fun and are excited and life is joyful to be even greater joys.
So what's one thing you wish people in the church would stop saying to couples who don't have kids yet?
This has been more recent, and I'm still trying to figure out how to process. Because it's not just like what we talked about earlier, it's like you just need to trust in God more, you'll be fine. It's so-and-so has health problems like you, you'll be fine, you just need to trust in God more. I really struggle with being compared to other people, just in general,
mm-hmm.
and feeling like I'm not living up to expectations and stuff. But my health problems being compared to someone else, that's like on a whole nother level. I'm still learning how to work through that kind of comment. And when someone says something like that, I shut down and I stop talking in that conversation. And I still talk, obviously, I still talk to a person, but I don't talk to them about my health
mm-hmm.
anymore. Or if they ask how I'm doing, I just say I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you are, but sometimes you're really not doing fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just that kind of conversation doesn't foster, I don't know, the ability to talk about how I'm feeling about still not being able to have kids because of my health. Yeah.
And just because it was easy for someone else doesn't mean it's going to be the same for you guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, again, I talked about this a little bit earlier, but it's unintentional. In the sense that they don't mean anything harmful by it, but it just is a thing about slowing down and thinking about what you're going to say instead of just saying something that comes off the top of your head, like, oh, that sounds like a good thing for me to say. It just needs a little more thought, put yourself in the other person's shoes, and that helps a lot. This is something that actually I've had to learn, and I'm still learning with my wife since we got married. Because there are things that I will say to her when she is in her deepest, darkest times. And she just looks at me and she's like, that's not helpful. And she can say that with me because I'm her husband. and she has to live with me every day. And so her helping me is super important, right? And so her bringing those things to my attention helps me. In other situations, she's not as comfortable in doing that because she doesn't want to be a burden. She doesn't want to, you know, hurt people and bring people down. She's very thoughtful about what she says. But with me, she brings that to my attention directly almost every time. And it's very helpful. Ephesians 4:29 comes to my head with this because I think we know this verse as Christians, but I think we need to take it a little bit deeper. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building up others. I was thinking about this verse the other day and how I know this verse. I grew up knowing this verse, particularly because we Christians try to encourage one another to be edifying and build one another up. But we usually take that as like, you know, don't cuss at people. Don't be angry at people. You know,
what they're doing wrong.
Don't point out what they're doing wrong all the time. Don't be spiteful to people. You know, all the obvious things that you're like, don't be mean to people. But then we don't think about the things that come to our head that we say, and we're like, ooh, this is exactly what this person needs right now. And it's like a quick fixy type thing. Oh, you'll be fine. You know what? God will take care of it. You're great. Just pray really hard and you'll be just totally great. Instead of actually like stopping and letting the person talk it out. And for me, one of the biggest things with this is when I say these things, to my wife, and I think that they're super helpful. It's like, oh, I got the solution for you right now. The times when I actually hold my tongue and I don't say anything, she actually talks herself through it. And all she needed was someone there to listen and just pray for her in the moment or after or whenever. And that's just the helpful thing that she needs.
Have you ever felt unseen or left out because you don't have children? What did that experience teach you?
I definitely struggle with feeling like I fall short of the standard. Not that there is a standard that every woman's going to have kids, but just feel like I fall short. Because when you get married, the natural progression is to have kids. So I definitely feel like I fall short with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also struggled with feeling less valued in God's eyes because I don't have kids. Because there are verses that in my past may have been taken out of context where it talks about women being blessed with the favor of the Lord. And then having kids as a result. And now me having kids, it's like I'm less valued. But when I feel like that, I remember that it's just saying that those women are blessed or not. Doesn't mean that the ones that don't have kids aren't blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And we also don't live in that culture of ancient times where women who didn't have kids were actually seen as a burden on society and not living up to their expectation and roles of having kids. So it's not like that nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
I think sometimes people have a hard time putting you into a category in their minds where you fit. And so there have been assumptions like you don't have kids, so you must be financially better off so that you can do this, that, or the other thing. Or because you don't have kids, you have all this time in the world to go do this, that, or the other thing, or you can help here, or you can serve over here because you don't have kids, but they fail to take into account life circumstances, health issues, different things that make life more complicated than, say, if we were 100% healthy, had solid jobs, and we had all the time in the world. And
my health has had a direct impact on my ability to finish post-secondary. And then to be able to work. Mm-hmm. Like, I have been off of work now for 2 years because my health has not let me be able to work, and that's had a direct financial impact. So yeah, it's been more difficult financially, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's another point of, you know, God's going to carry us through.
Yeah, and in some cases too, it's like, well, you know, time is ticking. You're never going to have kids, right? Because you haven't had kids yet. You're in your 30s now, and time's ticking, and are you ever going to have kids? Are you just going to waste your time, essentially, getting through this period of your life? Why aren't you guys being productive?
Or like you're being selfish to not have kids.
Right, exactly. And to me, again, those types of things being said are very short-sighted and they're not looking at the situation from our perspective. I think a lot of it just comes down to the fact that it's something that people are not commonly experiencing in day-to-day life because most people are able to get married and just have kids right away.
How do you think gender roles play in these expectations? For example, is there more pressure on women than men?
I would say that I've definitely seen it affect my wife more than me in the sense of her emotional stress. And this is just aside from maybe comments that she's gotten, just the struggle that she has to deal with in her own mind of not being able to have kids yet is difficult for her, very difficult. Her natural instincts are she wants to have kids. And for me, it is just psychologically and emotionally different for me. It's still sad. It makes me sad to see that we can't have kids yet, but I don't feel the emotional weight of it like she feels. I can play with my nieces and nephews and have a great time. And I'm not even thinking about my own situation, just enjoying the moment. But Jenny, as a woman, feels that struggle when we're around our nieces and nephews. The other day I was playing with all three of the kids at my brother and his wife's place and like just having a great old time. And I just kind of take a peek over at my wife and she's over there chilling, just watching me play with the kids. And she has this look on her face like, that's nice that you can play with the kids. It's really great, but I'm sad. And then I just sad faced her in a little, like a little quick sad face because I'm like, I understand. I feel bad.
You empathize.
I empathize. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. I empathize. And I see that.
It's basically, I see you in your pain and
yes.
Legit.
Yes.
And I want to help you carry that.
And in my heart, in that moment, I felt that pain too, that she felt in a small degree, because she would just go nuts. If I could be a dad and have my own kids and we could play around, just like I play with my nieces and nephews, or when we're visiting other families in the church and they have little kids and I have fun with them too. She just longs for that. She wishes that for me, and she wishes that she could be a mom, you know, and have those moments with kids as well, with her own kids. It's not that she's unhappy. She loves having fun with the nieces and nephews. Like when we go over there, like when she starts doing stretches and stuff, the kids will copy her. They get on the floor with her. She gets her mat out, and then they're trying to do stretches and things like that. It's comical too, because Jenny's doing these moves and she's showing them how to do stuff. It's so fun.
And sometimes there's activities where I can be more active with them. Like if we're in the pool or we went sledding.
Mm-hmm.
It's soft snow, it's hot, low impact activity. So I'm able to play with them more, and it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have any closing thoughts or words?
One thing I would say is, for those who are hurting, it is very easy to be overcome with frustration and anger and bitterness sometimes with what you're going through and dealing with people who maybe from your standpoint don't seem to get it.
Yeah.
But I would say, to an effect, also put yourself in their shoes and understand that it is difficult for someone who may be healthy or who's never experienced suffering in the way that you have to empathize and embrace your struggle in some way. One thing I've done is talk to people.
Yeah.
And just in a gentle way, help them understand your situation as best as you can. Not perfectly, you can't do it perfectly, but just have a quiet conversation and lay it out with them and how they can communicate with you better. And I find oftentimes in people I've encountered, people are very willing to learn and understand in that way. And if the person still doesn't seek to understand, that's a sad thing, but don't let it get you down.
Yep.
There are people out there that love you and hear you and empathize with you, and they will support you. And I understand when things are really hard, sometimes your own family doesn't get it, or your friend circle doesn't get it, or different things, like you can feel very alone, but you are not alone. There are so many people that understand. Look up groups. If you're in church, keep talking to people.
I think a good verse to remember is Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And that's something we need to keep in mind, I think, as believers, when someone's going through something hard. And if you don't understand it, just to be there and pray with them. And even if you don't understand, just pray with them and be their support. You know, I thank you guys for opening up. And even though I know your story, just sitting here and talking with you guys, like, it was real. Like, watching Jenny go through that.
And still go through it.
And still go through it. It's a lot. And thank you for opening up and talking about it.
Yeah. Thanks for being a good friend to us and encouraging us and supporting us through stuff. We are truly blessed to be surrounded by a number of people that have really been a rock and encouragement to us.
Yeah.
And we thank God for his encouragement that he has given to us through his word, through prayer of the saints, that being his church, people who have learned to empathize with our situation, people we've met that empathize with our situation. Mm-hmm. We are very grateful for that. And I hope this conversation encourages people on both ends of the spectrum, whether you're suffering or not suffering.
Yeah.
It encourages people to build one another up. That's the important thing. We hope this episode helps you feel heard or helps you understand a friend or loved one who struggles with infertility or who can't even try to have kids yet. Stick around for part two, where we'll dive into a deeper reflection, biblical perspective, practical takeaways, and practical encouragement for couples in similar situations.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, would you take a moment to subscribe and leave a review? Your feedback helps us reach more people who need these conversations.
Thanks for joining us on the Broken and Redeemed podcast. We hope this conversation encouraged you and made you think.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It really helps others find the show.
And if you want to see what's coming next, follow us on social media.
Until then, remember to seek truth, extend grace, and stay rooted in Christ. We'll see you next episode.